beautiful artwork to take a look at the prefix which George left us behind.
Yeah,
yeah, it would be worth it. That'd be a good photo.
We'll put it on the website.
Very complicated.
Can I point out something here?
Yeah.
I just gave a history talk to my high school students, which I give all the time, because I find it really extraordinary that at this time there was not only Homer, but there was also Ved Vyasa. And at this time, there was not only the Battle of Troy, which has now been historically excavated to have occurred at this time, there was also the Battle of Kurukshetra. And the difference, no, historically, the evolution of Greek and the evolution of Sanskrit with respect to poetics, as well as with respect to the relationship between gods and human events, matured in this period of time. And this period of time was also the exodus of the Hebrews from Egypt. And this period of time was the writing of the Old Testament. And so we see these three distinct streams of major events in quite distinct cultures culminating in the same kind of intellectual products.
Thank you.
Incidental. having to do with the manifestation of mind.
For me, very interesting, as Vladimir said, it was the first time that we had such a solid presentation and block with the through a historical perspective on our approach to knowledge, and to see actually in this historical context that it's of course with all of the human faculties. We can look at them from a perspective. Personally, possibly through my training of faculties, I was of course very happy when I saw the first written word in that calligraphy here. The rhapsodist, the singer, the wise man, the one who carried the hidden mysteries forward, the place of the singer, mover, dancer, traveler, maybe later in the history you could follow that same traditions to the troubadours, preaching, and for me, very interesting that contact I had with Don. I think Don is aware of the existence of our will since the early 70s also, and just recently when we got in contact through an Auroville friend and the way we communicated, it was very beautiful to see how many synchronicities were working towards that and how the organization also just moved. I really felt like there's something else moving our coming together, and definitely Don has, I don't know how he sees himself or calls himself, but I see him as one of these traveling minstrels carrying the message of sound. Even more so in a deeper sense, because he's really focusing since 40 years on primal sound. You can almost say the sound behind music, the sound beyond structure, the origin of music, and the means towards that was his interest and his play with the gongs. We have not, I don't know if he was even aware that he would have a chance to share something of his work here. Of course, I was inspired of Don's direct connection with Dane Rudier, because for many people in the last 30 years, of my generation, like Peter Michael Hamel and all people who worked through the deeper meaning of sound, Dane Rudier was one of the main inspirations. He did write already in the 1920s, a book on the rebirth of Hindu music, which was absolutely visionary, plugging in into the origin of the Hindu system of music, going back to the Vedic times, and seeing also the future of it. So, I don't know if people are aware, Dean Rudhyar was a great astrologer, one of the foremost Western astrologers, and cosmologist, composer, and he, I think, embodied that musical approach to knowledge. Astrology was just one part of it, the science of rhythms, and he had, I tried to inspire Don possibly to say something about the vision which Dean Rudhyar carried for the unfoldment of human civilization. He talked already in the 2030s about the rising global consciousness, the one humanity, the coming together of a human civilization as one. And specifically in musical terms, he created many new terms of syntonic music, the pleroma of sound, which is actually after, symbolically, after the breakup of the last century in the music world, where all different things were experimented with, and the whole music tonality broke apart with Arnold Schoenberg and the 12-tone system. Dean Rudhyar was one of the few listeners who heard, as I can see, we say seeing, but he heard a synthesis in sound expression for humanity. He was talking in the 1940s about world music, which only came up in the 80s and later. So he was really a visionary in that field. And Don, very much, I think he, your paths crossed at one point, and since then Don also unfolded, and I think is finding his own approach.
Well, there were two people, actually. Cyril Scott was another one that was part of the Theosophical Society, along with Rudhyar and Steiner, etc. But I met Dean Rudhyar as I was a Kundalini yoga teacher back in the early 70s. And I met him in Tucson, Arizona. And it made a big impression on me. And you know, at that time, I thought he was just an astrologer. Come to find out, he went into astrology to make a living, but he was really a concert pianist from Paris. And that, so, but his music was called functional harmony. He called it dissonant harmony. Music that did not resolve on the physical plane, but had to force people to resolve it on the spiritual level. Of course, once that music was resolved on the spiritual level, the next level up was again a reversal, and this was the ladder of Chaim, Jacob's ladder, into the Akasha. So his music really was the music of the Akasha. And it was, he called it pleroma, he called it the fullness of sound. And he used the gong as the example of this music, which he, again, part of his lineage was Alexander Scriabin, and the idea of the Holy of Holies, the mystery schools in the past. So this whole concept runs parallel to the natural harmonic series that we use today. It was called the music of the spheres. So the music of the spheres, of course, is dissonant harmony, meaning that everything is in its own particular orbit. It has to be separated in order to remain in their orbit. If it was in total harmony, the planets would come together, and they become going towards unity. So it was the idea of unresolved harmony, almost like poetry, where a poem never ends. It just leaps, you leap off of it, and it goes on forever within the consciousness. Same way with Rudhyar and his concept of music, which was that the music is just a springboard for the consciousness to absorb the descending force. And the gong, of course, is the instrument that the material relaxation, and later on it had the interpretation of the spiritualization of matter, which was given to it in 600 BC by the Buddha, Gautama Buddha. And this is the music I feel that I have been moved to help spread around the world. And so I called the gong masters, but they're really trying to fill a certain job, which is to help change the cerebral synapses in the minds of humanity so that it can dematerialize the reptilian mind that is still conquering the earth. And so we look at it, primal music, as going back millions of years to our reptilian genes that we all have. And how do we disengage the reptilian mind for the supernal mind to then take control and win the war on planet Earth, bringing synthesis together, functional harmony amongst humanity. So we feel, of course, that these next 4.5 years left of the Mayan cycle is also perhaps the culmination of the Platonic cycle of 26,000 years and the short Sokan cycle and the longer, the long count, and perhaps up to 104,000 years cycle, everything is culminating, and plus the Piscean Aquarian overlap is happening. So we have a period of time they call the jump time, big leap time, the window of opportunity in which humanity can, when time stops, and time accelerating to a point where the time stops. And this is what the gong does when people experience what I term the gong bath. When they are thrown into the ocean of the Akash, the silent sound within the fullness of sound. And in that particular space, the inner space, that they are able to dissolve the memories of the reptilian mind and to achieve this clarity of the new youth, the mind of the new man or the new person, which is totally clear and whose intuition is not based upon past experience, but it's creating a future from that point where time stops and then it begins again at the new cycle. So we're pursuing this, and it has remarkable effects on people. And if you haven't experienced it, I hope that you do, because after all, this comes from a lineage that goes all the way back to Blavatsky and the masters, all the way to the present time, and we're just trying to reveal this teaching again to people. Of course, Buddha said that when he died, when he passed his body, and asked if he would return, he said, well, I will at some time come back. And there was a question, is it 2,500 years, that which would mean today, or 5,000 years, which means nothing to us. So, but instead of coming back as a personage, I feel that it has come back through his secret coding of the gong. Because at that time, it was to put on the face of every gong the two Mandarin Chinese characters, Tai Loi, which represents the descent of the supernal mind, the descent of spiritualization of matter, and the key was happiness has arrived. So at this particular time, the gong's, I guess, basic meaning to people is that it allows them to achieve a happiness. And in that happiness and clarity, they can rearrange the neuron synapses and disconnect from this reptilian brainstem. So we'll see what happens insofar as it's spread throughout the world. And there's so much to it, and it's such an inspiration to me And I try to instill that in all our students that we have. And how much they grasp, I don't know intellectually, but certainly just by presenting the gong, they're doing a very good job. Interestingly enough, the gong bath, the gong experience we did the other night, did anybody here go to it?
Right. Yeah.
My mother, who is 103, Scorpio, passed away during the concert.
Yesterday
evening. And it was just interesting because here synchronicity rules the day, of course, here at Oroville. And a few days ago, my leg started to swell up. So I couldn't walk, couldn't sleep. And didn't know why. I thought it was because I wrenched the knee. And then I received an email from my sister Betty, and saying, "Well, it looks like Mom is going to be leaving the body very, very shortly. Her legs swole up on her and developed a blood clot. And it's turned black. And she's too old to operate. So they're just resting her easy, waiting for the end." And of course, I looked at the world clock and found out that we said a little prayer for my mother at that time, and at the very end of the concert is when she left her body. It was just amazing thing that happened. And my leg is better today. If you have any questions you would like to ask us.
I'm curious about this whole reptilian brain concept, because I've heard this man, David Icke, I don't know if you know this man, and he in some of his talks, he talks about these reptilian creatures that sort of live, I don't remember how he describes it, but sort of outside of our reality, but they try to come into our reality by taking over the bodies of people, and that people all over the world are reporting these sort of shape-shifting of people into reptilian-type creatures. And I wonder if there's any relation to this.
Well, let me see if there's any here today. Well, I look at it in a different way. You can take it to wherever you want to take it. And David takes it to where he wants to take it, of course, and which would be George Bush and the whole, you know, thing.
Yeah.
But really what it is the... going back millions of years, the reptiles ruled the earth. And of course, they died off in a catastrophe. However, the reptiles were linear, survival-oriented, no heart, no compassion in a reptile. It's all just mental. So the idea is that the reptilian genes that are here in the brainstem that give us our kind of survival dreams at night, they have, still rule the planet, as we see in the reptilian organizations, the religions, the corporations, the war machine, the nationalism, all of that stuff is all reptilian because it's linear. And so it's the idea of having this big changeover to the nonlinear aspect. And I feel that in order to do that, because it's so ingrained in the memories of everyone, that there has to be some great genetic transmutation to take place. And no better time for it to take place than now, no better people than us. And so this is what we feel is going on. Now, whether it actually occurs or not, at least in a theatrical sense, because my background is in theater. So I feel that this is the theater of the mysteries right now that we're presenting using sound as its basis. Now for the people along the road when we go to, they certainly don't understand it. They have no idea, not a clue. All the writings that I've done over the years, nobody wants to read, you see, which is fine. Because just the action, the doing of it, the presenting of this powerful syntonic concept. And the syntonic concept is a little strange for some people because in the ethers, everything is on the head of a pin, and Rudyard calls it, you know, there is no time, there is no space, there is no size, there is no distance, of course, in the Akasha. So by taking somebody inundated with submerged and penetrated by this Akasha in the form of fullness of sound, or Ahata sound, the heard sound, it takes one right to the Anahata, which you can only feel in the heart sound, the silent sound within. And it's that point where they make this transfer over and dematerialize, that all of a sudden there's a genetic transmutation takes place in the brain cells. At least that's the theory that we go by. Yes.
I've written and spoken a little bit about mantra in the yoga of Sri Aurobindo, because he is a fellow traveler in this sound transformation work. In fact, I think it was probably his major mission. He considered himself a poet. He always spoke of himself as a poet. But what he meant was this tradition of Homeric epic poetry, which creates an age of civilization, and subsequently mantric poetry of the Buddhist lineage, which created another age of civilization. And one of the things I've pointed out, which can only really be understood experientially, so intellectually it doesn't make much sense, but the Buddhist mantras have as their primary intention bringing us into that empty space and helping us leave behind those old formations. And Sri Aurobindo has worked on that same stream in Savitri very systematically. But he has introduced some new streams of transformational energy in Savitri as well. And so you can actually understand Savitri as an evolutionary mantric experience which goes from the earlier epic Homeric and Sanskritic to the Buddhistic and beyond into another realm of sound that creates new structures. And so he's on that cusp between the work of liberating from the past formations and at the same time building in new formations. And this is something that can be perceived experientially with the poetry. But this is not ordinary poetry, and it can't really be
read. I tried to get him to do some poetry today.
So we'll come to that in time, but it can't really be read. You know, this is sound experience, and it's a total sound experience that requires entering into, just as the ancient traditions required initiation through sound. Sri Aurobindo has sort of streamlined the process, I think, and the fact that the mother has manifested this force, this energy field, which allows us to enter into that stillness quite easily is a complementary aspect of the poetry itself. The two things work together. And just one other observation about that. There are a couple of other ones I'd like to just mention. I noticed recently that Sri Aurobindo revised the future poetry, revised 20 chapters of the future poetry in 1950. In the 1940s, there were some letters, and when just after he had revised The Life Divine and added 450 pages to it, he mentioned that he felt regret that he didn't have time to work more on this poem that George was speaking about, Ilya, because he felt that it was equally important. So he was trying to do something through poetry that we need to try to understand. It's very important. So we have a field of exploration ahead based upon that work in sound that he did.
Yes. I would like to invite those who have made the experience whether they can talk about it, what happened.
How they begin to disappear.
Oh, excuse me, just one other thing. We have, after the reptilian mind, to get free of the mammalian mind.
The mammalian mind.
And really, that's another major enterprise. because the new evolution that Sri Aurobindo is talking about is not that one either.
Oh, my.
They say that if you go like that, that's your reptilian genes coming out.
You think they're coming out now after the long bath? That was really wonderful. It kind of takes you through another place. And Don was telling us before we went into the bath that often, because of its healing effect, you can feel physical sensations in your body, pain, something needs to be healed, and I have chronic, since a kid, a lot of sinus problems, and I've been dealing with the pollens out there right now and sinus pain, and so that was the first thing that really flared up for me. My sinuses were aching, and much more so than when I came into the bath, but then they gradually just, it was like this whole clearing, so I was experiencing a lot of sensation in the head, just very much lightness and tingling, and just the whole body being so relaxed and sort of taking off into another realm. So the gongs, I think calling it a gong bath is so appropriate because you really do feel like you're just having sound wash over you and through you.
I think what it does is, I remember one of my first teachers taught me the gong outside of Rudyard was Yogi Bhajan, the Sikh Kundalini Yoga teacher, and he wrote a poem. And basically, it was the gong is the spirit song, the sound within all sounds, and that if a well played gong, the ego, the false self, cannot resist. A lot of times when people come into a bath, especially because their mind is going all the time and the shift over from the logical to the, intuitional mind is difficult for some people immediately to go into that meditation, contemplation. So sometimes people will leave a gong bath because they're not able to listen with the third ear. And so the listening with the third ear, of course, means that you're not listening through your ego, but through your soul. And they'll have to leave. But people who are able to stay through it and remain in the state of turiya, neutrality, then I think that's when the great benefits occur. Originally, the gongs were used as psychological tools back up to 6,000 years ago, at the beginning of the Bronze Age, in order to exorcise, because at that time the psychology was if you're negative, you got a little demon inside of you, and so it was used as an exorcism to remove that block.
just in that land there's this Greek person, Pyrrhicus, in Europe, and they found out that the gong is one of the most effective instruments in music therapy on traumas, on the severest traumas of partner loss and death of partners and stuff like this. The gong works very effectively.
Perhaps I can say something about it. It was my first combat. And it was so loud, that one moment I thought, oh, my ears. And then I was plunging in a war. So my heart was beating very much. And I was afraid. And then I thought I can do things I can do. I can do. I can go away or I can be aware. And I chose for that last one. And then the war goes away, gone away, and it was okay. And I'm born in 44.
Really?
Yes. And my father has gone in that war. He was, I'm Dutch, and he was transported to Germany to work there. So.
We did the great invocation as the seed thought for the gong bath last night. You all are, I know that you know the great invocation. And but that was, Rudyard wrote the original orchestration composition for it with Alice Bailey's lyrics, libretto. And they were supposed to present it, of course, around 1938, 39, before the World War began. It was supposed to be a tool to help end war, or prevent war. Well, they didn't present it. And later on, after the war ended, and I think it was 46, the great invocation resurfaced without Rudyard's dissonant harmony with it. So in 1979, I presented what we call Concerts for Humanity. And Dane came, and he couldn't, at that time he couldn't speak, so he had his wife at the time do his speaking for him through his written word. But he brought with him the original composition that had never been performed before. And so we had a piano and a pianist and a soprano sing it. And that was like a very important moment for me, finally to be able to hear the original great invocation.
When was that?
Hmm?
When?
79, I think. It was in Pasadena, California. It was the first tri-satellite event between Toronto, I think England, and Pasadena, which of course didn't work because at that time the satellites weren't very reliable and there was a shutdown on the satellites at that time. It was meant to be.
In a human body, we have a lot of senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue. Many of the Hindu mantras and Buddhist mantras, most of it is related to the ear, to sound. One of the Vedas, which is the Sam Veda, is only sound. There is no meaning, only sound. So what is this ear to do with the brain?
I believe in one of the Vedas, the Upanishad, begins with this phrase, the mind merges with the breath. The breath dissolves into heat. The heat disappears into the all that is, that which we have in common as the soul of the world. And then that begins. It's like in the beginning was the word. And I believe that this is... this word really was a tone. It was a tone that was absolutely, the sound in the great dark chaos before creation, the sound was bouncing back and forth within this darkness. And then at some point in this supernal membrane, the it broke through. And life was created and the universe came into existence. So a lot of times with the gong bath is that you begin to see lights inside. And Rudyard, of course, calls this synesthesia. And the idea of there's something that's also called synesthetic cinema that Gene Youngblood back in the 50s was promoting. But the idea is that all the mantras exist simultaneously in the akasha. They really make up the akasha itself. And the way that we have been using the mantras is not through repetition. I've taken the idea of Rudyard, of the haiku type concept that he had of music, seed tones that are like bullets that go right into the cortex. And so I've created something I call the Global Gong Mantra Sutra, which is the simultaneous occurrence of all the mantras overlapping at the same time in that space where everything exists at the same time. And it's a very interesting concept. It people don't really know about it yet, but sometimes you have to do a mantra maybe 50,000 times for it to have its full effect upon the being. Somehow or another, with the acceleration of time and the condensing of time, that we're able to layer the mantras on top of each other and therefore only have to do them a shorter amount of time. And that's what we're experimenting now with our sound research.
Yeah, what do you think about?
Very briefly, but I'm very curious, because you have experienced the dealt with natural sounds, I would call it like that. Now, since 20 years, the electronic sound explorations is really sweeping the world, and many people in the world are experiencing that. And I remember there was an experiment going on in Berlin at one Sun Ambiente, it's a big event, where people were creating electronic sounds at night and inviting the audience to lie down with their sleeping bags and to the morning and to let the sounds working on them. So what is your opinion or experience in regard to electronic music, and what is maybe missing there to date in regard to instruments like gong or organ?
I think there's the line's disappearing. And Rudyard felt that it eventually would disappear. At that particular time, the electronic sounds were just too metallic. A gong, on the other hand, is a synthesis of an alloy, but it doesn't. It's organic. The difference, I think, with Rudyard's music and the natural harmonic system of which the Tubans and the Mongolians use for overtoning, follows the natural harmonic rise. Well, this is the way that we grow old and we dissipate and we disappear as we burn up going through as the sound rises. But this is not the sound that Rudyard was talking about. He was talking about the sound that is like a cellular mitosis, that the sound that is expanding, that was when the original Big Bang occurred, it began to fill all space, and it did it through cellular mitosis or tone mitosis. So the gong produces tone mitosis. It's a parallel music system to our natural musical, natural harmonics. And so what we do is, of course, we incorporate both together. But it's the tone cell mitosis that follows most closely the golden spiral, which is, of course, the phi ratio of 1.618033989, which is never dying. has no death. It just keeps going on forever and ever and ever. And ultimately, when we finally achieve that place inside of us where the immortal self, the luminous self, begins to govern the being, then there's no death. And that achievement is, Aurobindo has talked about in his writings as well. So this right now is the research that is going on about how to use this sound in order to rejuvenate and regenerate the cells and the DNA of the body. And you know that afterwards, if it's all over, you really feel like you're regenerated. All of a sudden, you feel like stuff has been cleansed. And I think it's important now because the Mayans feel that we're now in the age of purification, the last few years. So it's a purification ritual. So I don't know if that makes it clear.
What do you think about the idea that, and I hope this indicates some answer to your question also, the idea that consciousness being the origin of existence, evolving takes place through time. Time is that travel of sound into space from the origin. As consciousness evolves, it integrates that sound which is developing through time. And so sight is an essential instrument of consciousness. It perceives distance. Sight enables us to perceive relationships of distance and movement through space. Sound is necessary for consciousness. It allows us to integrate a large range of vibrational fields in consciousness. Sight is more specific with respect to distance, sound with respect to integration. And so in the Vedic approach to an integral paradigm that we have been speaking about, we have been speaking about faculties. Those faculties are faculties of consciousness. Consciousness itself is. And so I have tried to convey in some poetry the idea that time is actually a process of return to consciousness of that which it is. And so sound development and hearing development, the refinement of atomic energy exchanges in the context of the organic cell, the evolution of this organism, which allows us to integrate sound and sight and thought and speech and the fire of inspiration and knowledge, is an evolutionary organism that is made up of sound and hearing and speech and sight and so on. So we are in a process of integrating a field of vibrations which we call sound and sight and so on, but which ultimately are only organs of consciousness. And at some point, consciousness will be integrated in us. It will be a process of integrating the whole field of vibrational
forms.
And mantra seems to me to be the pure intention behind that movement. It is the pure sound that allows that movement of consciousness to integrate perfectly in the being. The repetition of a mantra 50,000 times, I would call japa. I would not call that mantra. And the full articulation of the systems of knowledge that come through consciousness, I would call sutra. Mantra itself, I would call the pure stream of vibration that enables the integrated seeing, instantaneous integrated seeing to occur. And it's a perfect correspondence of the faculties of consciousness, sound, sight, hearing, field vibration, and organization in the body.
I feel you're right, of course, and the idea that we're developing this ability to embrace everything so there aren't any walls of separation anymore. That is a total grasping of the fullness of the universe. And with the idea that there is an acceleration of time that obviously is going on, and that it must reach that point where time stops. And it's at that point of the great transmutation of the consciousness. So we look at it as shrutis, revelations, so that I also do mantra, japa, and what, but this other alternative thing, which is simply the shruti, which is the seed tone or the seed mantra or the word that has to go into totally, it has the power to change the timelessness within the mind. So this is the idea. And the gong gives you a sense of timelessness and disappearance and dissolution and re-remembrance. All of that packed into this no time, no space, no size, no distance. The mind of God itself is the space that is, I believe that is why the gong is here. To give everybody a taste of that nectar. And once they have that taste, well then they can't erase that taste. And it itself replaces the reptilian memory. At least,
when can we have the...
There's actually just for an announcement on Sunday, 8 o'clock in Savchur, there's the last happening. It's announces a concert for humanity's sacred tone improvisations, Sunday, 8 o'clock in Savchur.
Is it a gong bath?
Yeah, you know, I want to send that gong bath, I think, actually for Auroville. I was very happy that we had this opportunity because it really broke absolute new ground. It's not about anymore being there in a concert and perceiving or having this duality between the doer and the receiver. Still, I mean, we were in a receptive mode, but what I enjoyed so much was being there with the full body, with all cells. It was not about hearing, it was not about seeing, it was maybe not about sensations, it was just opening the whole being and its cells to participate in something. So I was very happy that we had this chance, and I hope actually even on Sunday that possibility is there, and that we break out a little bit of that pattern of seeing something and then dispersing the energy again and all those matters. For that I was very grateful. So there should be opportunity also to live. People want to come, you take a mat along, because we have there's this amphitheater outside, so there are all different possibilities. And they don't see it as a concert, so there were musicians around who said, you want to join, they can be part of it also. So it's more like a participatory...
It is, in a sense, because there is a myth involved as well, that the music of the future will be spontaneous music that is not composed, and there is no premeditation involved at all. And our so great spirit might come through unadulterated by the ego of a composer or a musician. So not to say that this invalidates our usual, but it's a parallel thing, a different experience. So we invite master musicians to join us because we don't need rehearsal. If we rehearse anything, is to rehearse what we're not going to do, not what we are going to do. So this is, we keep it simple.
Okay.
So it is in the evening.
Yeah, 8 o'clock.
I have two copies of this that I made copies that people have left going back to the West. So if anybody wants the intentions,
I'll take one copy.
There's one for the library.
Okay, we'll pass it.
Just come.
Okay.
So maybe we should thank you very much for your beautiful,
yes,
absolutely interesting view. And we are looking at that particular also view that we could integrate all this knowledge and discover maybe some integral paradigm which emerges from all these bits of profundities, of these approaches which are connecting us to a specific approach to the infinite. And maybe this infinite will emerge once in all the faculties, as Rob was pointing out, that they are all engaged in one consciousness and they are all bringing us back to that one consciousness, which is
very significant for me that we're starting our world tour here from Oroville. Thank you.
And your name in Russian would mean exactly that, dawn.
And spelled backwards, it's nod.
Well,
you know, for a while we were doing this business here, but then we decided, wait a minute, maybe the rainforest would be nice. So the rainforest.